following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name when last year I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, woo, wheeling dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
To all husbands with the same interests.
It is John Pollock, and after a long departure, it is the return of Court Bauer. Together, it is Bauer and Pollock, the show that I have been asked continually on almost a weekly basis. Are you guys ever coming back? And I kind of said I wasn't quite sure, but we are. Court, are you alive?
I'm alive. You sound so excited to be back. It's good to be back, John. The enthusiasm is overwhelming.
I didn't go anywhere, Court. I've been pumping out shows day by day while you went on your quote-unquote siesta. Oh, nice vacation.
Yeah, that's my wish. Yes.
Yes, anything but. I know you've been through some hard times, as Dusty Rhodes would say, but you are back, you are on the mend, and you are ready to discuss. We have to go through 3 months of news.
Okay, let's get to it.
All right. The G1 is coming up. I believe that's where we left off, so we can pick up right from there.
Okay, what's going on in night two?
Hang around Brooklyn for NXT and SummerSlam. We'll chat some brand split. Lots of stuff going on. Hey, who do you have? Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz, the rematch.
Conor doesn't have a chance.
I mean, Nate did win the first fight.
There's no way Conor's going to win it. No way. I'd bet the farm on it.
Do you think CM Punk will make it to Cleveland at UFC 203?
Are you kidding?
He's had some injuries.
What a wild 7 or so weeks it's been from watching on the sidelines and...
I was trying to think in my head of the last time we did a show, which I think was right around early August, maybe.
July 29th, I think.
July 29th.
Yeah.
And I started to think, like, how much stuff happened since then. And I gave up after, like, 2 minutes because it's just so overwhelming. I will never, ever worry about a week where we have nothing to talk about because every week it's insane.
Oh, yeah.
And when you have, like, a multiple-month period – I mean, realistically, we're talking about 7 weeks, and that feels like a year ago in pro wrestling or MMA news.
That's the beauty of pro wrestling, too, is that sometimes it feels like it's so slow, nothing's happening. Other times it's happening so fast, it's like you can't even keep up. You can't process the consequences or the good, the bad, and the otherwise in a situation. But
and when it is quiet, when it is, wow, nothing's going on, that's the worst sign ever because something insane is about to happen.
So what's insane today?
Well, today we're looking at the free fall of WWE numbers. This was not a good week, Court.
Mm.
When you were there in WWE, if you had been there for a Wednesday morning meeting and we were discussing Monday's 1.97 rating and 2.68 million people watching our three-hour show, at what velocity would an object be thrown in your direction by a certain chairman?
I think at this point, people are numb to it there. You know, it's like you try to find a way to rationalize it. Are viewer patterns changing that radically? Or
I can't.
Is it something you take like a few steps back and you look at the big picture and you look at the data that you're provided? You look at the data you've had that shows you a snapshot of the last decade plus. You saw a gradual erosion from, you know, 2003 or 4 to 2007. Post-Benoit family tragedy, it really fell fast. And then it started to become more gradual. In the last year, last 2 years, the three-hour era, you've seen a rapid descent again. And the data doesn't lie. You can evaluate why those things happened. Some of them were avoidable. Some of them obviously weren't, in the case of the Chris Benoit thing, but it's very troubling.
I think that's where we're looking at things now. Is I think the 3 hours is just certainly over the years just been a killer on people. And I think for a lot of fans, you've almost been forced into this situation where if you want to keep up with WWE, it's very easy to just simply go on the WWE's own YouTube channel and you can get your highlights and you can get your fill of what are the major things rather than investing 3+ hours every Monday night. But that number to me is still concerning. I think it's really concerning at just how low it is. And you have to ask yourself the question, are we making fans, particularly in the United States, are we growing our fan base in any way, or is it simply just trying to hang on to the most loyal viewers that this is still appointment viewing on Monday night, much less Tuesday?
They're in a tough situation because they're trying to please two masters, your customers, your viewers, and then your network partners. The three-hour decision, only Vince knows how much leeway he had to fight that. It's going to ultimately hurt his leverage in the next 3 or so years when he has to go back to the table. And all their deals are up for renewal simultaneously with terms of broadcast rights. And what's his leverage going to be in 3 years? And what are they going to desire from WWE? Are we going to look at consolidation? Are we going to look at more programming, a combination of what are we looking at? It's hard to know, you know, what is rock bottom? What is that number? And at the same time, you look at the appetite for wrestling. It's there, but you're losing more and more of that casual fan base, the hardcore fan base that are filling 100,000 seats in Dallas this past year at WrestleMania 32. They're still coming out, and more than ever, look at that number. It does not lie. When you see that big stadium full at AT&T Stadium, it doesn't lie. But if you look at the future, you're getting less and less new fans and more of the casual fans, and that's where the sweet spot is for the business, where business can take off, creates a boom. You don't have that right now.
No, you don't, and I don't think it's even as simple as, well, the third hour has to go. I think we learned that lesson with Nitro, where the idea was, well, we cut it down to two. It's going to bolster those 2 hours. That wasn't really the case, and that had a lot to do with the product as well. I think killing the third hour, A, it's a massive financial hit to them at this point because you have to replicate that revenue elsewhere that you're sacrificing for what is a theory on paper that you're going to boost your 2 hours. But with that third hour, it's not as though it's just that third hour that suffers. It's the entire show that suffers. And how many people have gotten out of the habit of watching Raw Monday nights, whether it's because of 3 hours, whether it's because of talent that has moved on and the newer ones that they're not invested in, are they going to come back? So it's this 3 hour decision was a major risky proposition 4 years ago. And I think we knew down the road it was going to ultimately lead to something like this that's very problematic. And I don't know if there's such an easy solution as just nix the third hour and Raw is saved and suddenly we're doing 4 million viewers every Monday night. I don't think that's as simple, as well as the erosion of the audience wasn't something overnight.
Well, there's multiple issues going on. It's creative. It's the presentation. It's the, I mean, they've made some adjustments to the show, the way you shoot the show, you see the announcers from a different shot using a jib crane. But at the same time, how you're executing angles, how you're telling your stories has remained the same for 20 years. And how you're presenting the talent, where you're shooting these locales for the angles and stuff, how you're planning the seats. It's mutated, but it's still essentially the same. It's just a derivative of what was once actually a really better version of it. They need to blow up the format still. When they go to break, it's still the same way. How they do interviews, still the same way. But there's less of an emphasis on applying pressure. There's no sense of urgency when you watch a lot of what you see. And also, there's still the centerpiece of this is, of course, having the baby face have to deal with managerial conflict instead of it being the top heel versus the top baby face. Which is another traditional thing that's always worked, but in this case, they're still holding on to a trope that was the centerpiece of their explosion in the late 90s, and it doesn't really work as the same. I mean, I think it's not helped Seth Rollins and his conversion from heel to babyface. There's a lot of symptoms that need to be resolved and addressed. It's not just 3 hours, you're right.
So as we look at the current landscape of things. We're heading into Clash of Champions on Sunday, the Raw-only pay-per-view. I mean, we're still early into the brand split, the second version of the brand split. I definitely felt it watching Backlash Court, that it was a show that, it was a good wrestling show, but it certainly, it didn't have that real specialness attached to it. And I don't know if this Sunday's is going to either. I think that's sort of what we're in for at this moment, where you're getting really good wrestling on most of these shows. I have no doubt, wrestling-wise, this should be a very good show on Sunday, but it's more content. And when you take that specialness factor out of it, it just becomes more content for people. And I think that kind of ties itself into the erosion. You have an excellent roster, but you're just exposed to so much of it on a weekly basis. That's kind of what Sunday night feels like. And I don't think your Sunday special should have that feeling going into it.
Well, I also look at it like there's a lot of fresh matchups. You can't say, oh my gosh, it's Randy Orton versus John Cena for the third or fourth month in a row. You have TJ Perkins versus Brian Kendrick for the Cruiserweight Championship, which is great. Of course, you do have Cesaro versus Sheamus.
Who's TJ Perkins? I just watched Raw.
I know. And that's one of the things that was a weird representation of the guy, is the lack of representation of the new champion, and just how they utilized the Cruiserweights. It was very similar to me. I had horrible flashbacks of the Juniors, because the Juniors was essentially supposed to be a reset of the Cruiserweight division, just rebranded. It wasn't supposed to be midgets, but they still rolled it out the same way, almost like a circus. Look, the Cruiserweights are here, guys. The Cruiserweights are here. And I heard that on Monday night, and it was like, are they going to get all out of a clown car together? I didn't like it. The feigned enthusiasm, the tone was different from the WWE Network. They could have repurposed those spots that they aired, those little short features on each of the guys, and it would have been effective from the network. But they should have pushed it really hard, but they didn't. And they put it in that death slot, unfortunately.
Doesn't the decision to go with Brian Kendrick, doesn't that tell you everything? It's, here is somebody that at least people should be able to recognize from a lifetime ago on the roster. And if there's any guy that has a long-term story to go for that title, it would be Brian Kendrick. And he's going into this match just off a four-way without the story of the comeback and all that was involved. And you're almost forcing your audience that did watch the Cruiserweight Classic, that's going to compare this to that great presentation a few weeks ago where he lost to Kota Ibushi, how you're going to come within a tenth of the emotion that produced. You've almost put yourself into a corner here with Brian Kendrick. And I don't mean to be all negative as I'm coming out of the gate here.
Yeah,
but
I mean, yeah, geez.
I don't think there's a lot to be positive about the Cruiserweights from Monday. I mean,
It's early. I mean, that was I would say, not the ideal launch, but it's
But
early.
Did it not feel to you, and this was Way's comparison, was it was as if the Cruiserweight Classic finale was your one-night stand, and then Monday we got our first sci-fi episode. Like, that was the departure. It was so much that you had built up that it almost felt like this show was being produced by people that didn't even follow this Cruiserweight Classic and learned from what got these guys over and what did click.
Well, at the same time, though, Triple H, with Vince McMahon obviously unable to get to some of the shows now because of his injury, Triple H, who was overseeing quarterback in the Cruiserweight tournament this summer, is just doing the same thing here. Of course, Vince obviously has heavy input. He's not there in the trenches, but he's there from afar, and he's being looped in at all points of the day for Raw, for SmackDown. It's just want to make a note, when I talked about this on MLW Radio, the flagship show on Tuesday, people like, oh, Court's saying that this is like the worst like comprehension of a comment. Court's saying that Hunter's running SmackDown and Vince is running Raw. No. Obviously, Vince can't be there. So who's second in command? It's Triple H and Stephanie. It's that simple, people. Vince is still very much involved. Nothing's changed, but he can't be there. So moment by moment, they may have to make a call an audible. But that's Hunter. That's Stephanie in the trenches every Monday. And Hunter seeing this thing through, you would think would want this thing to be as similar as possible to the critically acclaimed tournament. But whatever happened on Monday was a misstep. And we'll see what happens on Monday. You know, is it a one-time thing, or are we going to see a continuation? We know the history from literally the 90s with the light heavyweight tournament and then the cruiserweights in the 2000s. It's not a great – they don't have a great track record for this, but they did a great job this summer.
I know you wanted to talk about my home and native land, Canada, and how the WWE is, I mean, you wrote here missing the boat, but I guess it would be missing the flight to Canada.
Well, yeah. You look at their champion, the Universal champion, I'm sorry, Kevin Owens.
Yes, he's not specific to Canada any longer, to this planet.
Well, when he's not doing shots and making towns in Mars, I think it would be nice the WWE to kind of put a focus back on Canada with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. You have two guys who are bilingual, very marketable, that would be very good in the media. They're not going to do something that's going to embarrass the company. But they could really pump up Canada, which was a great, great region for wrestling, from the East Coast to the West Coast and all points in between. An amazing market, and they're not. And I don't understand it, because Canada gets some of the best crowds, and they've been deprived of that. They don't really even tour regularly in Canada. And you have Toronto, you have Montreal. By the way, the Pat Patterson special we'll get to in a moment. There's so much history there, you know, and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn got their start in Canada. They're just the best representatives for WWE in Canada, and they're willing, I'm sure, to do the work. And your champion right now is Canadian when he's not, you know, touring Mars, he can come by. I don't understand it.
Well, I think you're going to get a barometer of where the Canadian market is at when they come here in November. They've announced TakeOver, Survivor Series, and Raw. Three straight nights in Toronto at the Air Canada Center. I feel Survivor Series would be a great time to culminate that Kevin Owens and eventual breakup with Chris Jericho. I think to do Chris Jericho one last time going for the title after Kevin Owens has scorned him, as Sami Zayn warned, I think that could be tremendous. I think that's the one guy you can put Kevin Owens against in Canada,
right,
of which he could be booed against. And you just have the sympathetic story of this veteran in Chris Jericho, and he fails in his last time going for this title to Kevin Owens, who is the heir apparent and continues on. I think that would be the best time, because those two have been so excellent together that when you do that breakup, I think it will be really effective because of the groundwork that those two have laid on television.
Oh, yeah. And I don't want to see it until it's right. And you can go for a while with Jericho versus Owens. There's no reason to get away from it right now. People always have that desire to split something up. You'll know. It'll feel right. It's the classic wrestling. You kind of have to wait and see and feel it. But you know what you'll do when you do it. And if you have more time, you can even fine-tune that and sharpen that visual, that image.
Well, I guess the question is what the time is for Chris Jericho as well.
Well, this is his longest stint in a long time since I was there. I mean, he's essentially a full-time guy now. You don't know what the shelf life on Jericho is for this run. I know he's got some stuff booked next year, but you don't know. But yeah, if he has to finish up, that does change things, but we'll see.
Something that's kind of attached to the Cruiserweight Classic, Johnny Gargano. Evolve put out this awesome video of his final weekend with Evolve, leading up to the big angle with Ethan Page attacking him on his final night, involving Matt Riddle, mm-hmm, and the torch being passed. This is one of the best 15-minute videos you are going to watch. An excellent angle, a great utilization of a guy that is leaving and getting all he's worth on his final night and transferring that to the guys that are sticking around. Have you watched this video?
Yes.
And are you in agreement with me?
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah. I thought Kenny Johnson, the man behind the video that did all this, did a wonderful job. And it's great content for the WWN network, WWN Live. It's great to see them doing stuff like this to add some depth to their storytelling, to get talent over and make them relatable. You don't usually see these kind of things from companies like Evolve or Ring of Honor. But Evolve's done some great things in the last year. Look at the talent they've developed, the breakout talent. And it's worked out great for them. You look at Gabe Sapolsky, he's going through a real renaissance, you know. He's got incredible momentum with what he's doing out there with this company, along with his partner Sal, and it's really cool to see them doing this. And again, the filmmaker Kenny Johnson, my hat goes off to him because he did a great job. These guys don't have the budgets of WWE, like with the Pat Patterson documentary, to do stuff in three editing bays and have all these cameras and, you know, a director here and the writers there. They have this is probably like a one or two man job at most. And it's amazing seeing what they were able to do. Really effective, really great stuff. I highly recommend it. Check it out.
Have you gotten to see a lot of, Matt Riddle's wrestling at this point?
Yeah, I like how he's incorporated MMA into it. It's not like crazy, but it's perfect that the amount he puts in there, and he's really connected as, with his personality, you know, and now it's always what you wonder with MMA guys. Are going to be, they typically can be reserved when they come over, but he's really amped it up. And, he's not the only guy that's going to probably make the leap, because Seth Petruzzelli, who is known for his fight with Kimbo Slice many moons ago in Elite XE down in Florida, is the striking coach down in NXT. And he's training with actually Mr. St. Laurent at St. Laurent's school in Orlando about getting in the ring and wrestling. And Tom Lawler actually once upon a time also was down. I don't know if it was at that school or another school that St. Laurent was with. But he was a wrestler before, of course, being now a UFC fighter. So
could Seth Petruzzelli emerge as Kevin Sullivan's third son?
Oh, my God. Never say never, I guess.
With BJ Whitmer and Steve Corino and the two, as Seth Petruzzelli, like, hatches out of an egg on ROH TV.
I would love to see Kevin Sullivan with, you have Steve Corino, you have, you bring back Mark Loon, why not? Mr. St. Laurent, Seth Petruzzelli. You could have quite the eclectic group here, this new age Dungeon of Doom. It would be disturbing, but,
those segments on Ring of Honor are my favorite. I just love them. Well, they're just such a departure from the show. They're great. They are ROH's version of, broken Matt Hardy, where it's so different from the tone of the regular show. And yet I'm still entertained by it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's what happens when you have, like with Matt Hardy and what he's doing with Jeremy Borash collaborating on that stuff. That's theirs. And that's their sandbox. And it's great to see something that's a departure from the rest of the product. It's been great for the product. And for Ring of Honor, when you have someone else creatively taking care of something in their own sandbox, like Sullivan is with this stuff with Carino. Carino's a bright guy and a creative guy, and Sullivan's track record speaks for itself. You can see, it's almost like, imagine if they did make a change and went in a different creative direction at Ring of Honor. Maybe it's time.
You mentioned the Pat Patterson documentary. Yes. I have yet to see this documentary thus far, so why don't you tell us about it?
It's beautiful. I loved it. I really did, especially the first half of it. You know, it was a really wonderful journey through Pat's life, and it was a really wonderful thing to see them honor Pat with this. I don't know why it's not on the network. It's on YouTube, and I really highly recommend it.
It's a WWE produced documentary, and it's on like an outside channel. It's not on any WWE platform to my knowledge.
It's on YouTube, but it's not on
the WWE's YouTube, right?
I think it is. I think it is.
Okay, I could be wrong then.
But either way, it's easy to find, and it's produced by them. So I don't know. I don't understand it. But in any event, you really get to see his life growing up in virtually poverty in Montreal, a house of 11 people in a 2-bedroom apartment, no bathroom. I mean, it's a crazy story. And then how he came out to his parents and the hardships from that, and then you know, finding his calling. And thriving and having incredible success as a performer, and financial success as well. The first 30 to 40 minutes are just fantastic. Just really, I was watching with someone that's not a wrestling fan, and they were just watching. They said that was fantastic. There was one little part, you know, where he says he finally comes out in the wrestling business on the Legends House. That was, of course, their doing that for continuity's sake, I guess, to keep that show's credibility intact, I guess. I don't know why. That wasn't the case. Pat was out in the business for decades. And what was kind of cool, there's like maybe two or three people that had an issue with it, but most people, you know, that's the beautiful thing about pro wrestling. It's a very accepting community. And, you'd hear like Pat just like, no one cared. No one cared that he was gay. It was like not a thing. It was like, okay, cool, whatever. You're fucking awesome. It wasn't like he was categorized in any way other than, you know, they even played a promo You know, his famous tag team partner, Ray Stevens, was like, you know, after this, we're going to go, I'm going to go out with the ladies. Pat, if you want to join us, you can. You could, you know, he had a little like wise ass smirk, and Pat popped in this promo they were doing for a match. And, you could tell it was like, it just, it, that's the beautiful thing. There is a communal sense in pro wrestling. And, you've seen it, you know, when it comes to even the race issue. You look at Sputnik Monroe and everything, you know, kind of ahead of the curve. And it's, wrestling can be a lot of things, both positive and negative. But when I watched that Pat Patterson documentary, it was a real, it was great to see him honored, but also to see, how accepting, the business can be. And, I highly recommend it. Like I said, the only little thing I was like, ah, oh, this Legend House thing is a little really off for me. But beyond that, it's a really special thing. I highly recommend taking 50 minutes out of your day just to check it out.
We also had some news this week with Cody signing with TNA, or
wait,
at least he's going to be.
I'm sorry, could you
just Cody?
Oh.
Cody, he is going to Bound for Glory, so it looks like he is going to be able to work for multiple promotions, with TNA being the latest one. And last week, of course, Brandi Rhodes signing with TNA, so one of them is able to use the name Rhodes, while Cody, despite a graphic that quickly had to be replaced by TNA, will be going under the name Cody.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that he's not been given the rights to his name. I think there's this weird thing where WWE obviously has immense respect and love for Dusty Rhodes and his contributions to the business and to the WWE. He was such a lovable figure and an inspiration to so many, but yet...
God forbid that his son go out and be able to use that name because of the millions and millions of dollars that the WWE would lose by allowing a talent to go out to the independent scene and to TNA as Cody Rhodes. It just, I don't know if the WWE could recover from such a thing. I've never understood this. I understand protecting your intellectual property, but it's not as though we're talking about a guy jumping from Apple to Microsoft. It's leaving the WWE. It is a massive step into the unknown, and God forbid they have something of recognition to go to independent shows, even TNA. At this stage of the game, this is not the TNA of 2012.
No, it's just something that I'm disappointed by. I mean, it seems petty, and you know, I know they didn't leave on good terms. Maybe this is their way of punishing him for that, but man, just... it's just not cool. This is one of those things where it's like, do the right thing, WWE. But
so if you want it, you're more of a legal authority than myself, Court. But if they were introduced as Cody and Brandi Rhodes, would the WWE have reason to dispute this? Would that be
no? I mean, if her name is identified as Brandi Rhodes, and you have Cody and I mean, that's a technicality.
That's what I'm saying. Is there anything that the WWE could state is infringing upon by linking Cody with Brandi Rhodes?
We'll see how petty they want to be about this. They can certainly make a case, whether it will hold up in court, who knows, but it will cost Cody to burn some money just to defend it or whatever. So,
I mean, if they're being introduced, how else could you introduce them?
Right. Well,
Brandi Rhodes, they have no reason to stop her from using that name. She never had that name in WWE, so she's well within her rights to use that name.
And this is a moreover, this is a lesson to legacy wrestlers. Don't assume just because your father had the right to use the name that you will. Get a trademark expert, get that IP locked in, because you never know. And then what you do is you just lease the rights to the name for that period to the WWE. That's what everyone has always done, and they have the exclusive worldwide rights to do whatever they want.
Are you saying Bray and Bo couldn't go out and become Blackjacks?
Well, they better get that Mulligan name, like if Flair, all that stuff. Charlotte should have. I mean, she's known as Charlotte, not Charlotte Flair or Ashley. But at the same time, it's like it's important to just. It doesn't cost that much. But it could cause it. Look, I mean, I'm sure Cody really regrets probably not doing that earlier in his career, because even if he was in the WWE for a year or two, he probably could have slipped that by and gotten it taken care of. I mean, CM Punk, great example. He had the IP before WWE, and they allowed him to keep it. AJ Styles, great thing, but you have to protect it. You can't just say, hey, just because I had the usage of it, and then they'll probably say, okay, there's a documented history. take some money, invest in your future, get that trademarked, and that way you own it, and they can't dispute it. I don't care if you think oh, my fans have been in this business for 45 years, if you know, whatever. If you have a different name than your legal name, you have to do it. Look at Ryback. Ryan Ryback now.
Yes. What number of questions he'll have to answer as he gets to the border with that name on your passport. When did you lock down Court Bauer? No one believes that's your real name.
Yeah, don't worry. No one's going to make money with it either. But I think Ryan the Ryback would be better than Ryan Ryback.
I'm wondering now what Charlotte would have to do if she left the company. She'd have to go on the indie scene as like Fayetteville or something. Would have to take on another North Carolina city. Or maybe she'd just take off like, you know, Flair hotspots. Like she could just be Atlanta. Center stage Flair. All possibilities.
I'm so glad I'm back.
Yes, we'll be taking an immediate hiatus right after this one as well.
Note to self. Now, you're talking about Cody going to TNA. Ricochet, a guy that's been rumored to be maybe on the way to WWE, he's saying hinting that possibly no WWE in 2017. My feeling is this is a move to generate leverage because you've informed Lucha Underground that you're leaving. You have New Japan, of course, but there's really no incentive to WWE to give you that big deal. So create some leverage. He's smart. And if he does opt to go in a different path, that's fine too. But I think it's smart to create some leverage here. I still think – here's the thing. If the Cruiserweight division doesn't work out, does a Ricochet work as well as he once did? I think he can transcend a Cruiserweight division, but if he's factored into that equation, is that what he wants to do?
And if this Cruiserweight division fails, I don't think it's a sign of the talent not being there. I think it's a sign that I don't care what talent you have, it's going to be bungled. And Ricochet looking at that, I mean, that's to me almost a warning sign. And I see a lot of these guys, like a Ricochet is a perfect example of someone that, yes, WWE is probably the goal of 98% of these guys out there, but NXT is not. And it's a question of how long am I going to have to pay my dues in NXT, making less than I'm making now outside of the WWE, where I have the freedom of making my own schedule. And I can do a tour here, take a break there. I'm doing Lucha Underground. Then there's a break from taping there. He's making really good money. If you're a Ricochet or the Bucks, whose contracts are up at the end of this year, I'm sure there's going to be demand for them. And they've done a great job in creating that demand for them amongst the public that I think they've upped their value over the last year. But is NXT, I think if you want some of these performers, you're going to have to give them a hell of an incentive if you're sending them to NXT for 12 months, maybe more. I mean, NXT, it's not just been a simple stop and then boom to the main roster. It's you have to put in significant time there and you're not making the main roster money there.
You look at Shinsuke Nakamura, you look at Samoa Joe, all ready to be called to the roster, all needed on the main roster. Yet they're at NXT because, again, you're serving two masters. And which do you need to serve in this one? What's the greater master you have to serve? It's the main roster. So you can move those guys up soon, and I think they will, especially if you have a few departures, say like Chris Jericho leaves for the Fozzy touring and whatever else. But you also have guys like Roderick Strong, Tommy End. They're Orlando bound. They're going to NXT. Others may be joining them soon, maybe at the end of the year. Who's to say an Adam Cole or the Bucks or whoever don't go along? And that would really revitalize NXT. Not that it's in need right now, but if you lose two or three major stars from there, yeah, you're going to need some of these guys. And Roderick Strong will be terrific in NXT. Austin Aries, if he stays down there, awesome. Tommy End is fantastic. And if you add Adam Cole, you add the Young Bucks, look out. I mean, that is a very, very strong addition. And, of course, we know that Strong and are a lock. So we'll see what happens there. And another thing that's interesting is HBK relocating to Orlando from sunny San Antonio to take the WWE Performance Center position. That's a big
– stunning.
It's a big story. I mean, that's a really big story if you think about it.
I want to know the size of the Brinks truck that they had to take out into the forest to offer Shawn Michaels to relocate, because I never imagined this guy was leaving his commune. I mean, his own version of the Hardy compound that he lives in to go to Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, great for the WWE that they were able to get someone of that level, but I'm sure it was not cheap. I'm sure it took a lot of convincing for him to leave there. I mean, he had pretty well divorced himself from wrestling. I mean, this is not a guy that's watching every week. It was someone that when he was called upon, he'd show up, he'd do his thing, but it looked like he was perfectly happy in retirement. Zero regrets about leaving. Didn't have that itch that so many performers have of one more match. It seemed like he was completely happy with moving on. And maybe this is something that at least feeds something while not having to work in ring, at least.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. When you lost Dusty Rhodes, a guy that had been everywhere, could talk, could really work. Now, you're not going to say he was a different type of worker, but he could go. And a great coach, great mentor, and had drawn big money everywhere, can get over everywhere. Now, all due respect to all the coaches they have at NXT, none of them could fill those cowboy boots that Dusty Rhodes had. And they were wondering, who's going to take that job? Who's going to be teaching that promo class? Who can help these kids get to next level, teach them how to be a big-time star, carry themselves like a star, and then the mechanical aspects to try to get the most out of your charisma, your persona, your personality. Shawn Michaels is a great candidate for that, a fantastic candidate for that. And you look at how many millions of dollars they have earmarked for the WWE Performance Center that they've put into the Performance Center. It all hinges on having someone be your general down there and being able to find and polish these guys and be all these things I talked about, all these qualities wrapped up into one person. And Shawn has done this in the past. Brian Kendrick, Paul London, Daniel Bryan, all those guys, Lance Cade, all those guys that he had out in Texas. And he had assistants and they were helping and stuff a lot more hands-on. But he does have a background. It's like he hasn't done this before. He is an excellent candidate and he is someone that Triple H can trust with his big project, his multi-million dollar project in Orlando that he can sleep at night knowing Shawn's going to get it done. So it's a sizable investment, I'm sure, but it's the right call.
Before we wrap up, let's chat a little New Japan. I just watched their Destruction in Hiroshima card from Thursday, which featured Kenny Omega and Yoshihashi. Katsuyori Shibata was not on this card. You know, when you have a reoccurring spine issue, yeah, it's time to take some time off. I'm very concerned about this individual. He is off for the rest of this tour. Did do his match earlier this week with Bobby Fish, retaining the title, and they're certainly building to Shibata and Kyle O'Reilly, which will probably happen in a couple of weeks. I can't imagine Shibata is going to be taking too much time off. But, man, when you're hearing spine injury, that's certainly concerning, even for someone like a Shibata, who I'm sure is not taking all of the doctor's orders to heart.
Well, it's really disturbing, too, because this specific type of spinal injury, it's the upper area of the spine, which is concerning. Just around the shoulder blades area, and it connects with the lumbar spine. So basically what you're looking at here, let me get my skeleton out to show everyone here listening. But what that shows you is it's that upper area, and that's what's concerning to me because you look at the history, especially in Japan, Mitsuhara Misawa,
sure,
spinal stroke, a horrible tragedy that happened half a decade ago, if not longer now. But this is an upper spinal injury here, and you have to be very careful. You're talking right, like I said, right around the shoulder blade area. It's not up at the upper part where the spine connects with the skull, like Tyson Kidd. But that to me is still one of the scariest near death experiences. And you know, my shout out to Tyson Kidd on his recovery. And you know, it's just, but that was a really scary one. This is a bad one too. But he has to take time off. And of course, he's in this precarious situation of his revival in New Japan. He had to kind of prove himself and his commitment. And the culture in wrestling says, you know, you, especially in Japan, so you can't just sit out. But you can't fuck around with a spinal injury too. And he can be. They need him. They really do. But they need him not just for the next tour. They need him down the road. So you have to, as a promotion, have the discipline to say, you know what, we need to make sure you do sit out. But the culture there's different than it is here.
Yeah, and I think it's a culture that it needs to change. I really thought it would after Misawa, of some guys at least looking, even if not at a human mortality standpoint, strictly in a business sense, that we are commodities that need to be able to go to keep some of these companies. I mean, look at Noah post Misawa and where they went after that. With Shibata, not to say he is the key guy in New Japan, but he's one of them. He's certainly a guy that I feel he's always been on that cusp, but that they haven't fully gone towards. But it's his style is one that you knew there was going to be massive issues with, and we're starting to see that as well at this point. And when you're talking about the spine, I just hope that they force him to take this time off, but I'm not very optimistic that we will. If he's back at King of Pro Wrestling in a couple of weeks, it's not going to stun me, but it will kind of depress me.
Yes. I mean, there's a badge of honor that's an older holdover from the old days in Japan, that they're a little less proactive with this stuff. But I hope Shibata gets the opportunity to really heal from a spinal injury. And what's a realistic time frame? You don't know until you know, but he needs to take it easy. He's a badass guy. I love his style. I love his work, but, you know, for his own well-being, he needs to just be careful there. So that's a troubling one, but they are grooming Kenny Omega for the Tokyo Dome, putting up his right to challenge, at the Tokyo Dome, on the line, like you mentioned. And how do you think the evolution of Kenny Omega as a project for New Japan, the replacement for AJ Styles as the top star, how do you think it's gone so far in 2016?
I think it's gone very well. I think the G1 was massive for him. I think that was a huge spotlight on Kenny Omega. I don't think anyone expected him to win the tournament, and having those matches back-to-back nights with, first of all, Naito, which is easily a match of the year candidate, one of, if not the best matches of the tournament, and then the following night with Goto, the most unlikely final. I thought that was just such a great spotlight on Kenny Omega. He's still a different performer from AJ Styles, but
oh, yeah,
to me has really come into his own, and they are all in on Kenny Omega in this spot. I think it was a testament on this Destruction card on Thursday that here he is headlining with Yoshihashi, which 6 months ago, the idea of this guy headlining a show is shocking. And they actually built this to where the crowd were into these near falls, imagining that Yoshihashi would win this contract to challenge for the IWGP title at Wrestle Kingdom. That, to me, is right on the level of people buying near falls of Taka Michinoku when he challenged Triple H for the WWF title in 2000. So a well-done job, I thought, at the Destruction card by Kenny Omega. And also, Okada and Bad Luck Fale. This is one of the best Fale singles matches I've ever seen. It's all him working Okada's arm so that the Rainmaker would be nullified. And it was a really well put together match. And to me, it's Nakamura and Okada that have gotten the best matches out of Fale in his career. And this was really good on Thursday's show. Also had Adam Cole and Will Ospreay on that show.
And Fale too. I think he's really come out of his shell. I mean, you see him cutting promos in Japanese because he speaks fluent Japanese, and the crowd has been reacting. And I think that's really cool because he kind of was like that big lumbering heater for a while in the Bullet Club. And he's kind of now, because of the shift and just the change up in the lineups and stuff, he's been able to do some more stuff. And I think it's important. It's healthy for talent to move on and not stay in the same place, which happened to the extreme extent it did in New Japan earlier this year. But I think freshening it up helps break open new opportunities for guys, and that's something that with the brand split in the WWE, you're going to see more of. In case in point, look at some of the fresh matchups on the Clash of Champions this weekend. And speaking of returns, Ronda Rousey, will she be back?
I thought you were going to go the Chael Sonnen direction. We can discuss both of
them. Let's do it. We got Chael signing with Bellator, which was it's a classic Bellator move at this point.
I think it's a smart Bellator move, and it's a smart Chael Sonnen move when you look at how much Chael is going to make in Bellator, the retention of his sponsors, and the level of competition he's going to be fighting versus had he gone back to the UFC, and he would have been thrown against either the Sharks at 185 or the big talent at 205. So I think this makes a lot of sense for him logically in his career at this point. And Bellator, you know, in the wake of Kimbo Slice's passing, they needed someone that was going to channel that interest, and Chael is that guy for them, at least in the short term. And with this roster and with this money he's making, Chael is still only 39 years old. The idea he could fight for two more years is possible.
I still see this in the long term, though, is the Bellator has not created any new stars. These are Band-Aids. They can be effective Band-Aids, and they're keeping things moving with the ratings. We know this. But they haven't been able to generate new stars, and that's important. That's an important part of this equation. If this was wrestling or any boxing, MMA, you have to have your homegrown guys, and they have to be viable at some point. And until you do that, you're spending a lot of money for the short term. And I know Scott Coker's big on these kind of things. He's big on the spectacular aspect of MMA, and I love it. But I think it's almost like you have to have it in moderation. But this is the strategy they have right now. And it will be effective, and I think it's going to get a lot of buzz. I'll be watching Chael fight, and he'll whip that crowd into a frenzy, and he'll give Bellator some awareness. And they just got to parlay that and transfer that momentum, that awareness, into hopefully their next generation. They really have to. As for Ronda Rousey, will she be back home in the octagon in time for New Year's? What do you think?
It seems that's a direction they're leaning. I mean, that's the date that Ronda's been rumored for, that year-end show in Las Vegas. Amanda Nunes, who's the bantamweight champion, has recently stated that she's going to have some fight news coming up soon. So that's certainly the fight that is possible that's out there, that you could certainly justify Ronda going for the title in her first fight back. And if they, the next couple of shows for them are going to be very important, because you have the ability with, if you can get Conor McGregor onto that New York card, which as we record this is up in the air if he will fight Eddie Alvarez on that show, there's the ongoing George St. Pierre drama that doesn't feel like it's reaching a resolution, and then the hope for Ronda Rousey to return on that year-end show. You could have three gigantic cards to end this year, and there's also the chance that none of them could happen. So those last three pay-per-views of the year, it's going to be feast or famine based on how they can work out agreements with some of these stars. I do expect Ronda back. It's just a question of when. We all know Conor will fight again. It's just a question of when. Yeah. And if they can get them onto this New York show, which there's going to be a press conference in your area, Court, next Tuesday night to officially announce the card for Madison Square Garden. And I'm sure their hope is that Conor McGregor will be announced for that card.
Yeah, MMA New York. I love it. And I'm going to be part of that history, because on October 14th, Combate Americas is coming to New York about a few weeks before UFC hits the Garden with a card at Turning Stone Casino and Resort. So it's great to see MMA back in my home state. I haven't had it here, I think, since I was like – in middle school, so it's been a long time, and finally it's back, and I'm excited about it. Before we shut the show down, I want to talk about something we've covered in the past, and that is Netflix and their new upcoming series, Glow. It's a scripted series we've talked about on past podcasts, and they have added a major star to the show from the wrestling world.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Marc Maron. He's attached to this.
Yes, he is.
Alison Brie.
Yes.
And Kia Stevens, the former Awesome Kong and Karma, also on this show.
What
an
eclectic bunch. I'd love just to see everyone sitting around the crafts service table to see what they're talking about.
This should be the show, should be the making of the show.
I really would love to see. I'm more fascinated with that than the actual show. But that's going to be a really fun show to see how they represent Glow and everything. I think it's a really cool concept. And, you know, it's interesting. Look at the women's wrestling in 2016, from WWE to Stardom in Japan, which is a phenomenal promotion. I highly recommend it too. You have Shine, you have all these different companies here in the United States, and now you have also the WOW out in LA, backed by the Buss family, that's looking to rev things up again as they reboot that. It's amazing when you look at all the women's wrestling out there. And there's a million other companies, Shimmer.
The amount of demand,
it's really
that
cool.
I've heard since WOW held that pay-per-view in 2001. When is WOW coming back?
Yeah.
Well, we finally got that answer 15 years later.
I think the appetite might have been a little bit more for WOW than it was for MLW coming back. But another one last story. WWE 2K reveals their downloadable content for their game. And finally, John Pollock, you can play as your favorite wrestler, Tatanka.
Oh, fantastic. I'm so glad Tatanka will be a part of this game. You should be able to be your favorite former WWE creative member. That would be, you should be able to play. That's a future WWE game where you can do my career mode and you can pick a writer. And that's how your career path follows. Like, you can pick Vince Russo, and it's just like, none of this makes sense. I just won, and instead, I'm going down the card. And then you could pick maybe Alex Greenfield, and it's like your storyline ends up being moved because there was a massive blow-up backstage.
I just thought it would just have Big Vito in a dress just harassing you as Greeny smokes a joint. It is actually ironic. You can actually play as – one of the writers that from WWE, Michael P.S. Hayes, the Fabulous Freebirds. You can do that. They have a Hall of Fame showcase, or they have the Freebirds versus the Von Erichs, which is, I think, a really cool concept. They also are going to have a moment like you can play a Sting or Flair in their Clash of Champions 88 match. Inexplicably, they call this a dream match, Papa Shango versus the Godfather. I don't know if that was on anyone's list of dream matches, but you can do it in the new 2K17 game. And, of course, your other favorite wrestler that you can play as or maybe even interview somehow is Bruce the Barber Beefcake is in the game. And I know you'll be playing.
Are you sure you can interview him?
Not for long, bro. He's a busy man.
Better be quick. All right. That's going to bring an end to the show. We will be back next week.
We will.
So you can check all of my stuff out at liveaudiowrestling.com. We have all our regular slate of shows up, reviews of Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and Sunday night, we will be on the Law. It'll be myself and Jason Agnew running through Clash of Champions.
Sprinting.
Jim Ross is going to stop by the program as well. That's because sprinting. He has a one-man show coming up in Toronto. So go to liveaudiowrestling.com. And Court, what is on your side of things?
Well, later today, Bruce Pritchard is back with something to wrestle with, and the subject today is the Radicals jump from WCW to the WWF, and what really happened behind the scenes? Who did they really see as the breakout stars of that group? Why didn't certain guys join in the jump? And the whole crazy story and a lot more, and that's something to wrestle with. It's a great show. I highly recommend it. Bruce Pritchard, part of the Inner Circle right-hand man events, along with Pat Patterson from the mid or late 80s all the way through 2008 with just a little brief hiatus in the early 90s. It's one of my favorite podcasts. It really is a fun show. There's a lot of Laps fans that listen to it, and they're like, oh, my God, I love hearing this stuff. I've never heard these stories before. And so I highly recommend that. And Ric Flair has a new show out with Bruce Mitchell of Pro Wrestling Torch. I'm on the flagship with Mr. St. Laurent, and recently there was a great show about 2 weeks ago, the VIP lounge with MVP with Matt Hardy. They tried an intervention, and I think Greeny and MVP might have gotten deleted in the end. But that's all at MLWRadio.com. We also have History in the Making Out with Matt Farmer, our resident historian. Matt and I look at Jack Pfeffer, the originator of sports entertainment and wrestling, along with some questionable business ethics, a really controversial character, a fascinating figure in wrestling, a power broker at certain times, an innovator at other times, and in other times kind of a sleazy promoter. Check that out. That's History in the Making. That's out now. You can get that at mlwradio.com. Check it all out.
Last thing.
Yes.
You want to hear a quick story involving the Radicals that has an MLW live audio wrestling tie-in?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay. So when some of the talent that was part of that jump they were close friends with Jeff Merrick, who was the founder of Live Audio Wrestling and the former host of the show. He has since gone on. He's now a big hockey broadcaster here in Canada. So the talent used Jeff to contact then WWF referee Jimmy Corderas about who could they possibly speak with if their contracts were coming due or were looking for a jump. And Jimmy Corderas was not quite sure of how to handle this, so he then got Bruce Pritchard to, I guess, get in contact with the WCW parties. But Jeff Merrick of the Law was one of the conduits to the Radicals reaching out from WCW to make the jump.
6 degrees in pro wrestling is a crazy game to play, and that was one of the big historic jumps, if not the big one, along with Haku, shockingly. That was like – it really put a nail in the WCW coffin because you lost like essentially a whole generation.
Wait, was that it for you when Haku came out at the Royal Rumble? This company's done.
If you remember that, it was just like that was one of those things where it's like, wow.
He was their hardcore champion, which he won a week ago on their pay-per-view.
It was like at that point, it was like the pile-on. I was like, wow, because it wasn't like, you know, this was the big game changer. It was just the totality at that point. And
that showed you even as late as 2001, WWF still had the desire to just stick it to them when they realized, hey, this guy doesn't have a contract. We can put him on our show. He's their goddamn champion.
That is a classic example of Vince McMahon. He will not let up in a fight. He will not let up, not until you're 6 feet under. And
well, in fairness, WCW would have done the same damn thing if they had the opportunity to.
But they were rudderless. They didn't have real leadership. It was six different guys. You had guys that had no expertise running this thing from Turner. The fact that they let the Radicals out of their deal was comical in itself. Why you'd ever do that strategically? Oh, then you want a happy locker room? Well, you just lost your locker room, essentially. You can always massage things. You can always massage things and you can get over it. In this case, they didn't, and they let go of Eddie Guerrero. Imagine that. Chris Benoit, Perry Saturn, Dean Malenko, and, you know, there were more guys that were going to go. Shane Douglas, Conan, and all that stuff, but didn't work out. Just losing Eddie and Benoit alone.
Yeah.
Look at 3 years later. 4 years later, you had them headline WrestleMania, and look at Eddie's contributions and Benoit's until he made a horrific, horrific mess of his life and his family ending it.
Mike Graham certainly, I mean, put them in a bad spot involving Benoit. But you're right. When those four left, I mean, that was really.
So what do you do? Do you get rid of that guy who was notoriously known to be useless? And wouldn't draw you any money and had a bad rep, or do you get or do you protect your house for the future? You know, it's a no-brainer. But the problem with wrestling sometimes is nepotism and you know, the good old boys. And that expression totally always would apply to some of those kind of things that would go on in WCW.
Well, you can go check that out, MLWradio.com, liveaudiowrestling.com, and we will chat with you next Friday.
The role of MLW Radio never stops.